Okay, good morning, everybody. This morning, our learning is sponsored by Yaakov and Diane Burstein in memory of Yaakov's mother, Ruth Burstein, Peshachai Rachel, Bat Michael, Aleha Shalom. Meneshama Havne Leah, our learning will be in her memory. May her memory continue to be a blessing. We are being somewhat ambitious this morning. I know I've given you three dafim. We're on the second side of Yud Tet, Yud Tet Amud Bet. Chaf is a relatively fast daf in the sense that it is go through a list of mitzvot that we say have to take place during the day, and the daf is going to say, how do you know? And then give a pasuk that has the word yom in it, and then we're going to do the whole daf basically saying, how do you know Malika during the day? Because it says yom. How do you know Zvichas during the day? Because it says yom. How do you know Megillah during the day? Because it says yom. And that's going to go through the whole daf, and then it'll actually lead over to the end of the parak on Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph. If time is against us, I'll stop before that, but my guess is we may be able to do that, which will make next Sunday, which is, of course, the day before Erev Pesach, a little easier to complete our task. So, again, first perek we did, that expressed the importance of hope, how flexible we are with the outskirts so that they can hear the Megillah, how the Megillah is associated with Matanot Le'ev Yonim, so even if you do the other mitzvot on a different day, the Su'udah and Mishloach Manot, that there is a connection between uplifting the poor, giving people a sense of possibility in reading the story. And then we had a reading of the Megillah provided by Chazal in what usually you find in a Midrash, but you find in the Gemara, outlining exactly what precipitated the story. And basically the story of Purim begins, the way Chazal see it, is because Achashverosh calculated the Jewish hope had died. 70 years had passed, they hadn't gone back to Israel, Yirmiyahu was wrong, everything fell apart, and that's what the trigger is for everything. And last time, last stuff, we have a debate about what the purpose of Megillah reading is, how much of it has to be read, and it came back to this question. Is this about Achashverosh miscalculation? Is this about the power of Mordechai? Is this about the power of Haman? Is this about the power of prayer? And we went through those possibilities. So the first chapter, again, was about the importance of hope to society, specifically in exile, which speaks to the theme of Masechet Megillah. And the second perek is, if you want to use alliteration, we had the importance of hope, which of course is not an alliteration, but now we have the medium of memory. And it begins on the importance of order, that you can't just communicate memory by giving a list of names, dates, bits of information semantically pocketed, and then say, well, I gave you everything, like I just gave you some money or, you know, the contents of a suitcase. Has to be presented in an order so that it builds the story. Otherwise, the memory is just, you know, discombobulated bits of information, which is why we said the Megillah has to be read in order, why Tefillah has to be said in order, why Kriyat Shema and Halal have to be said in order. There is a logic to the chronology in order to make the memory more impactful. And now we turn to a Mishnah today, Yud Tet Amud Bet. In the middle, we started this last time, which is about who is the bearer of memory. If you want memory to be effective, who has to be the presenter who gives over the story? And at stake in this Mishnah is two separate questions. If the person reading, to make them an adequate bearer of memory, the question is, do they have to do, in addition to saying it out loud, which is obviously prerequisite, if they don't say it out loud, nobody can hear them. You can't be a bearer of memory if you can't say it out loud. So the question then becomes, what happens if they can't hear it themselves? So in theory, we could say, what if you put really effective earplugs in and then you read the Megillah, but you can't hear it yourself? But the example given in the Mishnah is a cheresh, someone who can speak but can't hear. The second question is, what happens if they can hear but they can't absorb, they can't compute? Meaning they audibly, they're picking up the sounds, but they're not absorbing the information. And the example there is, so the shota is the extreme example of that, where obviously they're saying it out loud, otherwise this wouldn't even be a question. They're not computing the information. And then we've got this slippery category, where somebody is hearing, but we don't know what level they're computing. And this is a katan, or a child. They can hear. Although maybe that's also a question. Any of you who have spent time with young children recently, sometimes it's not always clear that they're hearing when you're saying things. But the question is, to what extent are they absorbing the information and how do we siphon that off? So the Mishnah, we'll go through it quickly again. The Mishnah says just in blank. We don't know who's saying this, and this is going to be the contention of the Gemara going forward. Is this Rabbi Yehuda, who's about to say something else in the Mishnah, or is this Rabbi Yossi? So, and we're going to go back and forth four times. Is it Rabbi Yehuda? Is it Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, etc. That's it. So everyone can read the Megillah, says the Mishnah, apart from a Cheresheot V'Katan, on the assumption, again, they're usually band together, Cheresheot V'Katan, because of mental capacity, that they're not absorbing the information. And then we're going to tease out, but surely there is a difference between a cheresh, meaning a cheresh can't hear, but the assumption is they can absorb information. And if they're reading it, even though they're not hearing the words they're saying, they're still getting the information because they're reading. So presumably they are computing. So all they're doing is not hearing, but they're doing everything else. So they're going to designate them separately. Rabbi Yehuda Machshav Katan, Rabbi Yehuda adds a phrase, which is a katan can do it, which designates Katan separately because he can hear. And the question is, at what level is he computing the information? But he's crossed the threshold, or she's crossed the threshold of being here, of being able to hear the Megillah. Full stop. Man tana cheresh aved nami lo. So the Gemara opens by saying, who is it that thinks a cheresh, even b'dieved, can't doing it? And the assumption is, the opening of the Mishnah says, everyone can read the Megillah apart from these three. Makes it sound like in any scenario. So if you had somebody read the entire Megillah, we said this last time, and then it turns out you say Yasher Koach and they don't respond, then you say Yasher Koach and they don't respond, and you go Yasher Koach, and then you go, oh my gosh, they can't hear. I can't believe I just heard the whole Megillah and this person can't hear, but I fulfill the obligation. So the Gemara assumes b'dieved this doesn't work. And who has a position that a cheresh, even b'dieved, can't fulfill the obligation? Amar Rav Manan, Rabbi Yossi. He says, this is Rabbi Yossi. Now we're going to have a Mishnah from Brachot talking about Kriyat Shema on this subject. In a minute, we're going to have a Mishnah talking about Truma on this subject. And then we're going to have a Mishnah talking about Birchat Hamazon, when there is some ambiguity about whether it is b'dieved, only l'chatchila, that someone who can't process the information can't say it either. Let's see. Didnan, there is a Mishnah that indicates this is Rabbi Yossi, because it sounds like even b'dieved it doesn't work. Kriyat Shema Shmuel Ozno Yatsa. The Mishnah, we're assuming this is a view of Rabbi Yehuda, who says if you read Kriyat Shema and you don't hear it yourself, you still fulfill your obligation. Rabbi Yossi Omelo Yatsa. Rabbi Yossi says no. If you haven't heard it, you don't cross that threshold. Even b'dieved, you haven't fulfilled the obligation. Sounds like that's the beginning of our Mishnah. Cheresheot V'Katan, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. Even b'dieved. How do you know the Mishnah actually is talking about b'dieved? Even maybe it's saying Cheresheot V'Katan isn't kosher, but if they did it, it works. Maybe the opening of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda, and when he says Cheresheot V'Katan doesn't work, he means l'chatchila it doesn't work. B'dieved, if it happened, it would work. So we say local sagadacha. We're going to have two reasons why we don't think that's good. Why it can be Rabbi Yehuda. Number two is going to be the one that comes to mind first, which is he's the end of the Mishnah that says it's okay with the Katan. We'll get to that in a second. But the first thing is, Cheresheot V'Katan are put together. So how, Lo Sakadad Ziktani Cheresh, first one in the line is Cheresh, Jimmy, the Shod V'Katan. It sounds like Cheresh and Shod and Katan are put together. Ma Shod V'Katan, the Avin Amelo. Of course, everybody agrees Shod and Katan can't do it, even Bidi Eved. So presumably a cheresh also can't even do it. And the Gemara says, no, that's not true. They're just put together because those are the people who can't read. But you don't have to identify them as completely identical. Okay, well, maybe we've got another reason why it can't be Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Makshav Katan. Rabbi says a katan can read it. So that sounds like he's in disagreement with the opening of the Mishnah. It says a katan cannot. Mechlal Dereish Lav Yehuda. He's skipping the dark gray. Dilma Kul Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to have a resolution where actually, even though Rabbi Yehuda permits a katan at the end, it's also him at the beginning who says a katan can't. V'trei Gavnei Katan Katani Lav. Because he's talking about two different kinds of katan. And he's going to resolve this issue about the threshold of absorbing information, perhaps. V'chazor Mechzorei V'hakitani. This is how we should understand the Mishnah in its fullness, and it's being concise and brief, but this is what it means. Everyone can read the Megillah apart from a cheresh, shoz, and a katan. But my dear and what am I talking about when I say that? Says Rabbi Yehuda in between the lines. When I'm talking about a child who hasn't reached the level of chinuch, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old. But a child who's reached chinuch, which we say is like 8, maybe 9, can do it even l'chatchila. So a 9-year-old can get up. There was some consternation in a shul in the UK a few weeks ago because they had the Haftorah, and an 11-year-old boy got up and did the Haftorah. And half the shul was up in arms. How can you have someone doing the Bar Mitzvah doing the Haftorah? And then the rabbi said, actually, it's okay, a cousin can do Haftorah, and then went back and forth, etc., etc. So you can imagine a 9-year-old boy gets up and does the Megillah for the whole community. Half the community says, how could that possibly be? And you say, Abidiyevet. Rabbi Yehuda says, even Lachatchila, you could organize that. It's got a beautiful voice, beautiful rhythm, enunciation is perfect. Why not? That's Rabbi Yehuda's view, if we take the Mishnah to be Rabbi Yehuda. And that's why he opens by saying, Lachatchila, you shouldn't have a Chereshota or a Yom Katan do this. But Lachatchila, you can even have someone who's not a bar mitzvah, meaning there's no chiyuv other than chinuch, there's a rabbinic obligation, so they can fulfill the obligation for everybody else. Are they absorbing more information at the age of chinuch? The assumption is yes. That's why the chiyuv chinuch kicks in, because they're now able to absorb information, so they can hear and they're absorbing. Now we're going to have some pushbacks against that possibility. B'mayu kimta, first word in the lines of kimta, it's about eight lines up. B'mayu kimta, hold on. So the Mara takes a pause and says, so how are you understanding everything now in terms of Rabbi Yehuda's view? Rabbi Yehuda v'di'eved. You're understanding Rabbi Yehuda has the view that b'di'eved, it's okay. He says, l'chatchila, you shouldn't do chershod v'kata. B'di'eved, it's okay. And l'chatchila, even I allow you to do a katan as an age of chinuch. Elahadatani, but we have a teaching in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, it sounds like. Yehuda b'reid Rabbi Shubham Pasi. He says, chersham adaba v'ein shomea. If somebody can speak but cannot hear, torem l'chatchila. They can say the Truma pronouncement out loud, l'chatchila. And you've just told me, Rabbi Yehuda, of the view, b'di'eved cheresh doesn't work. But l'chatchila, it doesn't work, b'di'eved it does. But now it sounds like he's saying, even l'chatchila, a cheresh can say something out loud for somebody else. Money, who's that going to be? Who says it in that Mishnah? If Rabbi Yehuda, if Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi takes a view of Rabbi Yehuda, d'yeved in l'chatchila, lo, it shouldn't work l'chatchila. Rabbi Yossi, the Avid Namala, and Rabbi Yossi took the view, even b'di'eved doesn't work. So now we've got a view that doesn't fit either of the major opinions. Elamai, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, okay, fine. We have to reverse course and say Rabbi Yehuda has a view, even l'chatchila, chereshot v'katan can say it, is what it sounds like, perhaps. Or at the very least, he thinks l'chatchila, you don't have to hear what you're saying, at the very least. So a cheresh, for example, you could say l'chatchila can read the Megillah, and when you say Kriyat Shema, you don't have to hear it, and when you say any of the other tefillah, you don't have to hear it. Even l'chatchila, that's a Rabbi Yehuda, so it can't be him at the beginning of the Mishnah. So this is where we've now gone back. We started with it's Rabbi Yossi, because he says even b'di'eved chereshot v'katan can't do it, and we said no, maybe it's Rabbi Yehuda, and he's talking about b'di'eved. It's okay, only l'chatchila doesn't work. And we said, but Rabbi Yehuda seems to have the view that you can even do it l'chatchila if you're a cheresh. We say, fine, it's Rabbi Yossi. Now we're going to push back and say, hold on a minute. If you now got the view that Rabbi Yehuda says a cheresh can do Megillah l'chatchila, and Rabbi Yossi's got the view a cheresh can't do b'di'eved, we've got extreme views, we're now going to have another Mishnah that seems to be in the middle and now doesn't follow anybody. Elahadetanya, we've got a brighter, four lines up in the yellow. Lo yivarach adam b'chad amazon b'libo. Person can't say b'chad amazon quietly to themselves, meaning you have to say it so you can hear it with your own ears. V'imberach yatsa, but if you did it, it works. Sounds like l'chatchila, you have to hear what you're saying, but b'di'eved, it's okay if you don't. Money, so who's that, according to where we are right now? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, it can't be either of them. Rabbi Yehuda, if it's Rabbi Yehuda, you can say benching quietly, meaning in your head, even in the first place. Rabbi Yossi, if it's Rabbi Yossi, you can't do it at all, on tachaf. Okay, first level achieved. La'olam Yehuda, filo dechila. Lokasha. Okay, we're going to revert now and say it's Rabbi Yehuda who's, and we're sticking with this, that Rabbi Yehuda has the view, a cheresh can say it l'chatchila. So how are we going to deal with now this Mishnah that just says about Bechad Amazon, that b'di'eved it's okay, l'chatchila it's not, lo kasha. Hadidei, hadirabei. When we say, oh, one is a view of his teacher and one is his own view. And he differs from his teacher to Tanya. How do I have a sense of this? We can have a brighter. Rabbi Yehuda quotes his teacher. Rabbi Yehuda, Omishim Rabbi ben Azariah. He quotes, in the name of Rabbi ben Azariah, Hakarat Shema, so Hishma Lezma. If you say Kriyat Shema, you have to hear it in your ears. Shnei Mar Shema, Yisrael Hashem Lagenu Shema Echad. Good proof text. You have to hear Shema, is the word Shema. In the word Shema, Hashmila Oznecha, Mashal Tomas Mipicha. You should hear from your ears that which you have said with your mouth. Does that sound like Lachat Chila, but B'di'eved it's okay? Or even B'di'eved, you have to hear it? Meaning, if it's b'di'eved, it's okay?
No.
Yeah, I'm with you, but that's not how the Gemara understands it. If you look at the last wide line of Rashi at the top, Lishna mashma, l'chatchila aval di'avad lo. The language of this sounds like you should really hear from your ear what your mouth has said. It doesn't say lo yatsa. It just says you should do this, which makes it sound like this is a prescription for the ideal, but if you don't match the ideal, you're okay. And this is in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who's his teacher. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is the view that a cheresh should not say Megillah L'chatchila, but B'dieved, if he did, it's okay. But Rabbi Yehuda's of the view, even L'chatchila Cheresh could do it, which means he's not our Mishnah at the beginning. The beginning of that Mishnah must be Rabbi Yossi, and then at the end, Rabbi Yehuda says, and a Katan can do it. And now if we haven't made that division between Rabbi Yehuda being at the beginning and the end, who is Rabbi Yehuda permitting to do it when he says a Katan? Any Katan. Sounds like a three-year-old. If they're capable of reading, they're really a prodigy in advance, they can do them. He just wants it to sound like. So Rabbi Yehuda has now adjusted his position into as long as you can hear it, and has some modicum of comprehension, meaning a shota still couldn't do it from his perspective, even though they can hear it, but a katan can. They're a bearer of memory, which begs the question about how do we understand childhood? Meaning if they hear it, it's true they might not be absorbing the semantic quality, but they may be getting something a shota isn't, which is when a shota hears, it's literally just sounds, the way we're understanding shota being, it just sounds... sound wave bashing off a response board. It's picking up the information. It's picking up the sound, but it's not leaving an impression. A child is hearing the sound. I may not comprehend what they're doing, but it does leave a memory. In a year's time, the katan will say, "I remember saying this," and say, "Oh, what did it mean? I have no idea, but these words sound familiar." Many of you will have seen at some point young children being able to repeat a song or repeat words back to you. And they'll sing, a video came up on my phone. Google does this sometimes. They just like give you a video because they want to make you emotional or something. So they send you a video compiling different things that you've had on your phone for a while. And then they give you like a stretch of your child. It was my 8-year-old's birthday last week. So it gave me a video of the birthdays of the last 8 years. I don't ask how it knows, it does this. And it puts music to it. And then you're watching it. And then it makes my wife cry. And I say, all right, I'm not showing you that again. And that's it. So it puts the video together. And you get a video of her at like 3 singing a whole song. I'm like, there's no way she knew what that was about, but you can repeat it. So you'd obviously have the question, so how do you define a shota then? Let's say somebody is capable of that. Maybe they're not defined as a shota.
No, just in normal, as people normally get older, when they are able enough to repeat something, then you can predict that they understand somewhat. In the normal.
Oh, this is really interesting. And we said last week, you can read the Megillah or hear the Megillah if you are nimble or nim, lirin or nir, and you can repeat back. So maybe this is establishing the level of mental competence, meaning if you can repeat back, it's leaving a memory. And whether you comprehend it or not is not the key, which we said also is true for the meaning of the words. There are words, I think it was Rav Shimon who said, look, none of us know what this word means, but we're holding on to the memory. So you can be a bearer of memory if you don't absorb fully, which is more inclusive, meaning sometimes we don't understand exactly what we're saying or what we're hearing. But as long as we can repeat it and we can recognize it, we're perpetuating hope over time, which is our duty. So Rabbi Yehuda permits a katan. It sounds like even if they're not higi l'chinuch, meaning they're not comprehending, but they're hearing and it's leaving a trace. Yeah.
I'm just a little confused by the methodology of Gemara. I'm wondering if this is a popular technique where they're saying that Rabbi Yehuda is not saying his own opinion, but his teacher's opinion. It doesn't mention his teacher. It just mentioned it as him. Is that a common thing that...
So it's a good question. Here, the top of Chaf, it mentions the teaching where he speaks in the name of his teacher. So you've got Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So we can say that. Usually we wouldn't distinguish unless there's pressure. We'd say he's just evoking his view and he got that from his teacher. But now we've got a number of Mishnayot which seem to be at odds with each other, where Rabbi Yehuda's name is mentioned sometimes and not others. And we were under the impression there are only two views on this subject, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. And we keep having to move Rabbi Yehuda about because he's not fitting with the Mishnayot. We said, oh, maybe there's a third view. And we thought Rabbi Yehuda had one view, but actually sometimes he's talking in the name of his teacher and sometimes he's talking in his own view. So now we've got three views to go with and now we can settle all the different Mishnayot. So it's just under pressure. But this does come up relatively often. When such pressures exist, we'll say, oh, it does seem to be intention. I can't stretch this teacher in two. Presumably in one case, he's evoking the memory, the tradition of his teacher. And in one case, he's taking a different view. And it's only under pressure because we don't want people to really differ from their teachers very often. That's not how tradition works. But under pressure, we're forced to because we're trying to preserve the tradition of all these texts at the same time. It's just a good question. So at the end of that teaching, which in, so the first one learned is Motzi Mepicha, Rav Meir says, In response, we're still part of that teaching where Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of his teacher, L'chatchila, you should hear Kriyat Shema when you say it, but if you didn't hear it, your Yotzei is what it sounds like. Rabbi Meir says, you want a proof text? I'll give you a proof text from Shema. Shema, how do we understand the word Shema? So if you look in the different Sidurim, you'll have different translations. The kind of King James translation that took hold for a long time, Shema is translated, Hear, O Israel. If you look in the new Koran, I think the Alt Scroll says, Hear, O Israel, but I think it says, Hear, Israel. But if you look in the Koran, I think it says, Listen, Israel. Rabbi Sachs changed translation, and he put a comment at the bottom talking about Shema doesn't just mean to like physically hear, it means to comprehend somehow. And presumably Ramirez would inflect it that way. And he says, and look in the next paragraph, that which I've commanded you on your heart. This isn't just about receiving sound waves on your eardrum. This is about comprehending. Everything is about comprehension. So it actually doesn't have to be out loud. You don't have to hear it. So you heard it in your ear. That, you know, we could all sit here and say Shema out loud. So we all hear ourselves saying it. And none of us absorb it at all. He said, what's the point of that? It says, b'chol levavecha. That's the key. Full stop. And we're not going to drill down on Reb Meir's view, but we just cited that teaching to show that Reb Yehuda teaches in the name of Reb Elazar ben Azariah, his teacher, that b'dieved, it's okay. L'chatchila, you want to be able to hear it. At this point, the Gemara says, maybe because of Debbie's reasons, hold on. Now that we've suggested, as a side note, Reb Meir's got a view that actually, l'chatchila, you don't have to hear anything. Can we just pigeon Reb Yehuda to be identical with his teacher and say, Reb Yehuda has a view, l'chatchila, you need to be able to hear, but b'dieved, you don't, just like his teacher. And then we'll align that with all the Mishnayot, and then maybe he can be the beginning of our Mishnah again. So who's going to take hold and ownership of this view that even l'chatchila, you don't have to hear anything? Is anyone going to take that view? Anyone left? Reb Meir just said, it's all b'chol levavecha. So now the Gemara says, we don't want to distinguish people from their teachers generally, and you've now provided us an out. Again, it says Rabbi Yehuda here and Rabbi Yehuda there, and we may have to play with, for example, as it says here, hashal adil achachi, now you've come to this position, first one is Dvarim. Tema, why don't we say, Rabbi Yehuda karabe svarile, Rabbi Yehuda follows his teacher, so we don't have to make that distinction. V'hadetani, and when it said, Yehuda b'redus from Ben Pazi, we, in our minds, we think, oh, that's Rabbi Yehuda, because it says Yehuda Drubshim ben Pazi, but that's a different Rabbi Yehuda. That's not the same Rabbi Yehuda. That's Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. And maybe he's saying, Rabbi Meir. That's a view of Rabbi Meir. So now we've solved, and we're now in a fifth instantiation of who's teaching our Mishnah. So we began with, it's Rabbi Yossi and Chereshad Vechon can never do it. Then we went to Rabbi Yehuda and said, oh, maybe it's L'chatchila they can't do it, but ever they can. And then we said, no, maybe it's Rabbi Yossi who says L'chatchila they can't do it, and but ever they can't do it. And then we said, oh, maybe we should stick with that because Rabbi Yehuda's teacher differs from him. So we're still with Rabbi Yossi in instantiation number four. And now we're at five and we say, actually, maybe that view that L'chatchila even a Cheresh can say something, or you can say Shema not hear it, that's Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yehuda is back to the position that Bidi Eved, a Cheresh, can say the Megillah, which would mean we're now reading the Mishnah again as, potentially, a Cheresh of a Katan shouldn't do it, but if they did, you're Yotze. But a Katan who can understand, Rabbi Yehuda says they can do it from the get-go. Now you'll notice the Gemara is about to move on, which means it's unresolved. It's saying these are the possible ways to read the Mishnah, which again suggests the Gemara methodologically is not primarily in the business of producing bottom line ruling, which is why we look for little hints where it'll show us to the Rambam who provides the code, who'll say this is the bottom line law, which of course begs the question, so what is the Gemara doing as it's teasing through these issues? If it's not, sometimes it'll say Hilchata de Rama Gamliel, or it'll say Tiyuvta, so it suggests, you know, I've given up. But more often than not, it will just present options. And there, you know, we come up with, well, if it's a unanswered resolution, we've got a principle that's the rule because we're trying to figure out how to live. But the Gemara is operating under a different rubric to some degree.
Sometimes it says teku.
I meant teku, not tiyuvta.
If it doesn't say teku, does that mean there is a resolution?
It means that there can be a resolution, right? Teku is, we've got no earthly idea, and if anyone ever tells you this is what we should all do, you can say there's no should here. But here, it's, you can say, I'm reading it this way, that's my tradition, and don't tell me otherwise. But it does open up the possibility that there could be disagreement still. And this is what you struggle with. If you're in an exile and you're all in the same place, you're in Bavel, you can tolerate a level of disparity because you're held together by other things. You know, you're all doing the laning, you're all doing the ritual, there are some base things. But as soon as the community starts scattering more, and this is how the Rambam actually introduces his halachic of the Mishneh Torah, he says, we're at a point where Torah is about to be ripped apart. We're all in different places. There are people who, he says, frankly, with all due respect, are not leading lights. They're not scholars and they're leading communities. Torah's falling apart. And he says, just like Rebbe had to put the Mishnah in order so that things didn't get lost, I have to put this together, otherwise Torah is going to be ripped apart. So he puts together the first code in Jewish law that says, this is what we do, this is what we do, this is what we do. And to some degree, he did save Torah. And then everybody studied the Mishnah Torah, and then the Shulchan Aruch fed off the Mishnah Torah, and the people have said it's reasonable to presume the Shulchan Aruch wouldn't have emerged in the same way. There wasn't a Mishnah Torah to feed off, and now we've got the, you know, the Mishnah Berurah, which feeds off the Shulchan Aruch, and it's kind of, well, that's what's sealing us together. But the Gemara is not at that level of history yet, it seems. Jews are all in Bavel, in one place. Okay. Rebuda said, I think a katan can do it. And here we're going to have another thematic reflection on why would he permit a katan and why would we not? Is a katan a bearer of memory? And this is going to be evoked explicitly here. I'm Rebuda. Rebuda says, I'm going to prove to you that a katan can do it. And what's his proof? Katan hayiti v'karite lamala merebta from zekenim belod. I was a child and I remember saying this, reading it out loud from for Reb Tarfon and the elders in Lod. Amrlo, the Gemara responds, Ein mevin rai min katan. Meaning, we don't trust children to remember. That's the whole point. Don't come and say, I remember when I was a kid what happened. Like, we're of the view katanim can't be trusted as bearers of memory. So don't come along and say, I've got a childhood memory that said children can do it. By definition, we're not going to believe that. So if we thought that this was just a technical katanim are not included, this makes clear, it seems, what the motivating factor is for the side that say katanim can't do this. At which point, Amar Rebbe, Tanya, there was a brighter, Amar Rebbe, Rebbe says, thinking of Rebbe Yehuda the Tana, Rebbe says, oh, I've got a proof, katan hayiti, when I was a child, karite lamala Rebbe Yehuda, I remember reading it for Rebbe Yehuda. So what might you push back and say, I'm not interested in that proof? Right, same thing. That's not what the Gemara does. The Gemara says, hold on, who let you read it? Rebbe Yehuda. What's Rebbe Yehuda's view in the Mishnah here? Katan can read it. So that you're telling me, oh, you once read it for Rebbe Yehuda. He says Katanim can do it. So the Gemara begins, Amru lo, they said, Ein mevin rai min amate. You can't bring proof from the lenient view that you're allowed to do this for everybody. At which one the Gemara, thinking of Debbie, said, Ein mevin rai min akatan. Why didn't they just say, that, like before, Rebbe, you were a katan, we don't trust your memory. So, chada va'od karmalei. There's, you know, they're doing one and even more. Meaning, correct, that would have been a pushback. But they're saying, and even more than a katan, like, this logically doesn't prove your case that you had a lenient view adopted by the figure who's lenient. Chada, number one, de katan ha'ita, we don't trust your memory. Va'od afilu gadol, even if you were a gadol ha'ita, and you weren't reading, but you remembered a child doing it, you can't prove the fact that Rebbe Yehuda permitted that. Full stop, end of Mishnah. And now we're going to spend a few minutes reading Psukim, essentially. So let's do the Mishnah. In current of Megillah, v'lo malim, v'lo tovlim, v'lo mazim, v'lo chen shmer yon, k'na gejon, l'titvol, ashadei tzachama. A number of different mitzvot that are obligated from daytime. We said they should not be done until night. Now, there are different stages in the morning for the day to begin. If you're purely secular, when does the day begin? Does it?
Dawn.
Interesting. Is there a
midnight?
Yeah, midnight, I think. Meaning if you're like registering a form and they say it has to be, it can be done from this day, you know, people line up places from 12 a.m. It's a new day, is my guess. But we're so plugged in, like, but that's not day, but technically speaking, that's day. So in Jewish life, meaning if we said you could do it from the 3rd of Adar, no one's queuing up at midnight, people are queuing up at right before nightfall. But when is nightfall? Is it Shkia? Is it Seis? Is it Plug? So there are all these questions. And in Jewish time, we don't just have day by day, we have day and night, and day and night. So when does the juncture shift? And it's interesting, in secular life, is there ever a distinction between nighttime and daytime in legal sense? There's nothing, right? There's nothing where, like, this date at daytime, you can do something. Which is interesting. I mean, as we read the next stuff, my temptation or my instinct is going to be, this is all just technical stuff, but there's clearly something at play that's more profound about the distinction between nighttime and daytime and when mitzvot can happen and when they can't and how we describe them. But because there's no kind of parallel concept in contemporary life outside of Jewish life, it's hard to think of a parallel to draw down on. So maybe it'll come to us as we read. So we said, you can't read the Megillah, you can't do a Brit Milah, you can't do immersion, Tovah Levlo Mazin, you can't sprinkle the water of the Paradum. And so if they... somebody's in a position where they're not allowed to do tefillah until the next day, you can do it from Netz. Now, Netz is when the sun, literally this is when the sun, it rises over the horizon, basically. It gives you some sparks of light. But when it starts from the what we call halakhically sunrise, so it's hard to make that distinction. Alot Hashacha is when it starts to get light in the sky. Netz is when the sun literally pops up. So it's already light before the sun pops up. So there's a distinction there, but it is about visibility. And we're saying, l'chatchila, you should wait till Netz. If you have to do it before, you can do it before. And this comes up a lot of times in the winter, in this part of the globe, in this hemisphere. That if, you know, Nates is not going to be till 7:15, what happens at the 6:20 minute? And we say, well, Alos is earlier than that. And there are a couple of days, usually maybe 4 days a year, when you're not even at Alos yet, and it's 6:15. So sometimes, you know, you wait, you put tefillin on afterwards. In England, it would happen far more frequently than 4 days a year. So they would usually put their tefillin on, and then after Yishtabach, they would move it around and say the bracha again. Oh, not again. They would move it around again and then say the bracha after Yishtabach. So this Gemara establishes, this Mishnah establishes, l'chatchila should wait till Netz to do daytime mitzvot, sun, the sun's in the sky, but if you can't, you can do it from when it starts getting light. Minalan, how do I know any of this? That the Megillah has to be during the day. It says during the day, b'yom in laila lo. Okay, there you go. I know the Megillah's got to be during the daytime. Maybe this disproves Rabbi Shimon ben Levi's view. What did he say? He said, after it at night and daytime. And we've just said the Megillah has to be read during the day. Kiktani adayom. The one says, no, it's just talking about the daytime reading has to be during the day, but it's not exclusive of the fact that you have an obligation to read it at night as well. Meaning, so the hover minute is you could read it at night and then again at night to fulfill your daytime obligation, presumably. But the conclusion is it has to be during the day, and we're just setting the parameters of daytime when it begins. V'lo malin, and you can't do mila before then. Dechtiv v'yom hashmini yimala, has to be during the daytime. Now, again, no one is assuming you would have done this on day 7. Everyone knows it has to be on the 8th day of the child. And we've just said, when does 8th day begin? It begins night. That's when day begins. You can't do it during dark. So the question is, how do I know it has to be done during daylight? And we say, because it says, Bayom Hashmini, not Bashmini. And we're saying the word Yom indicates it has to be during light when this is happening. And if we're talking about bearing memory, we may want to plug into here that there is a different memory evoked during darkness than there is during daylight. And it's key that the second reading of the Megillah doesn't take place under the cover of dark. There is a fundamentally different kind of atmosphere during light. And again, in contemporary life, we don't have this sensibility because we've got LEDs on all the time. But you can imagine, or if you've ever been in a case where you don't have lights, you've been camping or hiking, or there was a power cut, and you actually, it is dark, and then you see the sunrise, you hear the birds chirping, and it gets light. There is a sense of like rebirth to some degree. And to read a story in light, as opposed into the cover of dark, produces a different effect. And we're now suggesting that all these mitzvot have to be done in that atmosphere, which is temperamentally different. A milah I want to devote myself to God. As soon as it gets to the beginning of the eighth day, I should do it right now. Why not do it at night? We're saying, no, a Brit Milah has to be done during light, which again is an ancient sensibility that we've kind of lost with the bringing in of electricity. So we've got Milah. What do we have? But yeah.
When you say, when they take the proof from, that it says Yom HaShmini.
Yeah.
How do Psukim indicate the Chagim? Isn't it Yom HaAbasre or whatever?
Yeah.
So our Chagim don't start at daylight. The Chagim start at night.
Yeah. It's a good question. I don't have, and this may be why, if I'm not mistaken, the alt scroll does not do what I just did. It just says, oh, all the Gemara is doing now is saying that these mitzvot have to be done on the day. But I'm trying to, and maybe they are indicating what I'm saying. I mean, it does in the sense that they had the view that it must be trying to say something extra by saying bayom. What you're looking for is, well, show me a mitzvah where it doesn't say the word yom next to a date.
Actually,
do you have one?
When it says yom, I don't know, it's all the time. It's about the carbon. The carbon out during the day.
Right, so we'll get to that. But, yeah, interesting. So maybe actually it never says by yom when it talks about a festival other than when it comes to the obligations. Interesting, we'd have to take a look. I'll have to listen during the laning on Pesach. Okay. It's a good question. I don't have an answer to mine, so we'll have to look into that. It's available. I just don't have it to mine, so we'll have to look for that. First one line of Vayom. V'lo tov lim v'lo mazim. We don't immerse and we don't sprinkle water other than during daylight. Dichtiv ahizata hor ala tamei. Bayom HaShvi'i. So it says the word Yom there. V'idkish tefila lahaziyah, and we compare the immersion to the sprinkling. So we now know that a lot of the events that take place in the Beit Mikdash have to be done during daylight. And again, the key is you have to be in a atmosphere of light for this to work. And I think with the eclipse this week, maybe we purposefully got this sense. And there was a lot of reporting about wildlife going crazy for, you know, half an hour when it was totality over them, and they all like, am I awake? Am I asleep? What should I be doing right now? Someone from the community said they were fishing during the time. And as the eclipse came into effect, they caught like tons more fish because all the fish came out, which suggests maybe you should just go fishing at night. But anyway, we'll leave that. And we said also, and this is where we're going to have one moment where we break away just from a proof text for a second. And we say, and you said that tefillah we just said has to be during the day. And I was saying, someone who has to wait another day until they do tefillah also has to do it during the day. Pshita, obviously. You just said tefillah has to be during the day. So why are you telling me that someone who has to be tovel the next day also has to be during the day? Tefillah should always have to be during the day. Istrich, we need it. You might have thought that we compare somebody who has to wait a day to go to the mikveh compared to the re'iyah, the first sight or the first occasion of the Zav, and we compare the Zav's first emission to a seminal emission, because in the verse it says this is the law concerning the Zav, and we compare that to a Balkari. So you might think, oh, a Rishonah Bazav has to do tefillah during the day, which means the day of. But when it comes to a Shemeret Yavam, they can't do it the day of. So it's compared to a Rishon Shel Zav, who say you can Tovel immediately. But we know the Shemeret Yom, they have to wait a day, but they're compared to the one who can do it immediately. So you might think they have to wait through daylight. And then because they're compared to Rishon Shel Zav, they can do it immediately, which means as darkness hits. First one line is Tavla. We know that they can't do Tefillah during the day of Yushmer Yom Dechtiv, Kol Yomezav Kamishkam Nidatali Yilah, because it says that during the days of Zover, they have to push it off, so they can't do it during that first day. But Lal Yomila Avid makes out Shimon Vatidbul, but maybe Shemer Yavim can do it immediately when it gets dark at night. Kamash Malan, therefore it teaches Kivin to buy Sphira through Biyamahu. We said, oh, since that's what we're teaching in this Mishnah, Shemer Yom, because it needs to be counting, meaning they need to wait, we say waiting has to be until daylight. Full stop. The kulan shasu mishalem reshacha kasha. And we said, and if you do it earlier than nates, so it has to be during the light. When is it most potently light? Once the sun has come over the horizon. You know, there's a big difference between if I'm holding a flashlight, you know, around the corner, you can still see light. And if I point it in your face, it makes a big difference. If you've got nates, that's when you can do these mitzvot. And if you did it when it was already light, but it wasn't kind of glaring, you fulfill the obligation. How do I know that? Second line. Amar of Rabbatim Akroyim La Oriyom. How do I know it works as long as there is light? Because it says God called Or Yom. Lemeir of Akroy Yom. There was light, and God said it was daytime. Elamat. Now that you've said that, the Choshech Kara Laila. How does God determine when night is? The Choshech, when it's dark. Lemachshech of Akroy Laila. So as soon as it gets dark, there's darkness. You should say it's nighttime. And yet we've said, until you can see the stars, it's not night yet. Now this is a challenge, because, yeah, there is no orb that emits darkness. You can say, oh, darkness is being cast. Darkness is an absence. So it may be you have to wait until all the light has gone, rather than the appearance of dark, which doesn't really appear. So, you know, a historian of science might say there's something going on here that doesn't match with contemporary science, that might think darkness and light function in different ways, but you don't have to do that. Elam Rabzera, Rabzera says, Mehacha, this is how I'm going to prove to you that daytime and nighttime sort the way they do, even though it doesn't entirely match. That as soon as Alut HaShachar has begun, it's daytime, and maybe night isn't until Seder Kochavim, even though it's already got some darkness in the air, or light is beginning to ebb away. And the proof is taken from Nehemiah, where it's describing building the second temple. They say, we were doing the work, half of us were holding spears, and this is a way of saying, we were working from dawn till dusk, meaning from morning till light. Sounds like he's saying from Alot HaShachar, that sounds like, oh, the day starts with Alot. Even though we prefer Nates, Alot works, and they did it until Seder Kochavim, which is nighttime. So I'm not going to get into the whole, well, how much darkness do you need? There's a proof text that makes this case clear. Va'omer, and Reb Zera goes on to say, and there's another verse, if you weren't satisfied that, which says, V'hayelanu alayla mishmar, and we did this at night, and it continues to say, uvayom lacha, and we did work during the day. So it says it twice. It says, we were there from Alot HaShachar into Tzei Kochavim, and then again it repeats, we did night and day. At which point the Gemara said, my va'omer, why do you need that second verse to kind of cement what you've just said? You just said you did from Alot HaShachar to Tzei. And he said, well, you might say, v'chitem, mashal medel shachar lav yomam. You might say, no, sunrise is not daytime. Umachi arashim shal leila. And you might say, and maybe nighttime officially begins with shkia. Thank you. When the sun goes beneath the horizon, but there's still some light in the sky. Mignu mashri. And when the first verse, Nehemiah says, oh, when we were there from al shachar to kochavim, he might not be saying we were there from dawn till dusk, like halachically speaking. He might say we were there early, before day started, and we were there late, after night had already begun. So that's why Tashmavi, Yelanu Alayla Mishmar Yom Lachan. That's why he says, and just in case you're wondering, that is halachically day and night, which is interesting, because Nehemiah is now not emphatically saying how committed we were. We were there from before day until after night. You're saying we were literally there. We clocked in our hours, which got a very different tenor, talking about rebuilding the second temple. Meaning, you committed to this or not? The Gemara just read that it's like dampen everything down. Nehemiah is saying we were there from the moment the day began until it ended. But there are other priorities we had in life. At night, we were there with our families. We were resting. We didn't get there until we had to. It's got a very different tenor to what Nehemiah is now presenting as a committed people. Like, what are your commitments? And it's not we were there, you know, as much as we possibly can, but we were there for daylight hours, which is an interesting perspective, full stop. Mishnah. Kol hayom kasher likriyas Megillah, kriyat Halel, l'tanit l'tkiyat shofar, l'tila luv, tefillah, masafin, l'masav, l'parim, l'masav, l'diyom, kippurim, l'smich, l'shchit, l'tnufa, l'higasha, l'kmisa, l'aktar, l'mikla, kabbalah, l'ziyah, l'shkiyat sota, l'arifat, l'hagalah, l'tarit, mitzvah, full stop. All those mitzvot we've said, kol hayom kasher, can be done any time during the day. Happened to be this year on Purim. It was a challenge for my wife to get to either of the minyanim in the morning on Purim morning. She wants to hear the Megillah. So when we went to my in-laws for Suda, my father-in-law very graciously read to her at, I don't know what time it was, 4 in the afternoon. And you may have seen they also publish for Queens, like every minyan, when there's a Megillah or a Shacharis or a Not available during the day, and they were going pretty late where they're available. So it might feel odd, like I should be reading it as early as possible. And this is a way of saying, I mean, there is a separate value of Zriz Magdim LeMitzvah that we're not talking about here, but there's a separate value of expressing zeal when it comes to performing these things. And we've also got a position that you should do a mitzvah before it becomes stale, which when something isn't bounded, there's a sense that it'll just fall away and get delayed if you don't take advantage. But this is bounded, and the Mishnah is saying, any time during the day is okay. You do it at 4 p.m. and it's still light. You don't have to worry, meaning all we need is light. It is not about earliness, isn't a good word. It is not about promptness. I don't want the word.
Alacrity.
It's not about speed. It's just about atmosphere. So it could happen at any point during the day. Is good. Gemara, Minalan. How do I know that all these things... Oh, this is where the Alt Scroll differs from the way that I said it. The previous Mishnah, the Alt Scroll was in alignment. This is where it disagrees a little bit. Minalan, how do I know it can be done any time during the day? Damakra says in the verse, talking about the Megillah, V'yama elin is korin v'nasim. And these days it should be remembered and done. Sounds like any time during the day. Meaning, so it's got to be done during the day, but it doesn't say any, it doesn't have to be morning, anything. It can be any time. The Krit, how do you know you can say halal any time? You know, this sometimes happens, I'll say, for teenage boys. And they'll come along and say, I just woke up. It's 2 p.m. and it's Rosh Chodesh. Can I say halal now? It's like, okay. So halal can be said any time during the day. Dichtiv, as it says, mizrach shemesh ad mavo'o. It says in halal itself, from sunrise or sunset. Now that may mean from east to west, but either way, it's taken this as a until sunset. Rabbi Yossi Omer Zeha Yom Asar Hashem. I've got a different verse. Says, this is the day that God made. It just has to be during the light. It's not about speed. It's about atmosphere. L'tilat lulav. What about shaking the lulav? Dichtilach tachlan l'chav yom rishon. You should take it by yom harishon. L'kiyat shavit dichtilach yom trei yelachem l'musaf. M'hano emam l'musaf dichtiv dvar yom biyomo. What about tefillah muslim? K'musaf m'shavin rabban. The rabbis base the tefillah on the korban. V'ledu parim. How do I know that when you make the confession over the cows, that you have to, that it can be any time during the day. Yalav kapara kapara miyom kippurim. We learn the word kapara as a bridge to another area where Yom Kippurim says kapara can be any time during the day. And it says the word kapara with a para, with a cow. So that can also be done any time during the day. Tanya, how do I know Yom Kippur? It can. Gabi Kippurim, it teaches with Yom Kippur. You should atone for your family and yourself. The kapara dramna kazavim dabin is talking about kapara with words, meaning confession. And it's during the day. How do I know? It's done during the day. What about confession with the masa? It says, it says that, talking about Maaseh, I say before God, I removed from my house all the problem. And it says during the day. How do I know that leaning on a cow and slaughtering the korban, rather, can be, is any time during the day? It says the word yom, talking about shchita, and it says smicha and shchita in the same sentence. Luke tenufa, what about waving the korban? Dechtiv, but yom anivchem et ha'om, it says during the day. Ligasha, what about drawing near? Ditzkish letnufa, that's compared to the waving. Dechtiv, lakagum ira isha et minchat kanaod ve'nifa ve'ikriv. He compares there drawing near and waving the korban, and it says yom with the tenufa, so that works. What about all the different elements, rituals around the korban, when you're killing the bird, or you're sprinkling, or you're mixing, or you're burning? I commanded them during the day concerning korban. It's going to be any time during the day. What about giving the sota water to drink? Torah. It says the word Torah in two different places. It says in one case, the Kohen did all this during the day, talking about ritual sacrifices. And it says there with Sota, it says the word Torah, talking about Sota, on the Chaf Aleph, Amud. Aleph, Ma Mishpat, Bayom, Afkam, Bayom, just as the, just as judgment is carried out during the day, Beit Din has to conduct proceedings during daylight, which is also an important concern that doesn't seem to feature in this discussion other than here. Comes up all over Sanhedrin and elsewhere. Why does it have to be during the day? Presumably it's a different consideration about being able to see evidence or hearing witnesses or reading facial expressions. That's about visibility and fact as opposed to the atmosphere, let's say, which means that there may be kulas where you might be able to do Beit Din at night if you're not interested in fact or facial expression, but you're just rendering judgment. and there are discussions about that in Sanhedrin. But here we say, just as judgment has to be done during the day, so too the sota has to be during the day. Lorufa ta egla hagala. What about when you're doing egla rufa? How do I know that's to be done any time during the day? Amdu Rabbi Yonai kapara k'tiv bakadoshim. Just as we had kapara with Yom Kippur, and we had kapara with the vidui on the para. We've got also kapara written here when it concerns an egla rufa, so that also can be any time during the day. You can do it in the afternoon, do it in the, you know, whenever it works. Lutarat matzora. What about the matzora? Dichtiv azotia tarat matzora b'yom tarato. It says during the day. Concerning mitzvah, it can be any time during the day, full stop. And then we said in the end of the Mishnah, there are a number of different mitzvot that can be done any time. Did we read that in the Mishnah? I think I got sidetracked. The last four lines of the Mishnah, sorry, in Kaf Amud Aleph, in the middle, and we said, and there are mitzvah that have to be done during the night. There are not many, but there are a few mitzvah that have to be done during darkness, I should say. And you can do it any time during darkness, and that includes ksirut ha'omer, cutting the omer offering, lagdech alav ve'ivarim, burning the innards and the fats that are burnt overnight. That can be done any time during the night. And the last two lines of the Mishnah, Zeklal, this is the general rule. Davshim esrod v'yom kasha kol ha'yom, davshim esrod v'layla kasha kol ha'layla. Anything that has to be done at day can be any time during the day. Anything at night is any time during the night. Which one you might turn around and say? That could have been the whole Mishnah. Why don't you just save time and have that the whole Mishnah? So the Gemara is going to reflect on that. Okay. So Kol HaLaila, first one I call. Kashal Ksirut HaOmer said, anything at night can be done any time of the night. How do I know that Ksirut HaOmer can be done any time during the night? Da'am Amar, as Mar said, Ksirut Tzvira B'Laila V'Avar B'Yom. The counting and the cutting should be done at night, and you can bring it during the day. So there's no biblical proof text, but he's saying that we know this tradition is the case, and there's a saying that goes along with it. And what about burning the innards? It says all night until morning, so it knows. It says, general rule, anything that's a mitzvah during the day should be done during the day. Why are you saying this? Either just say this, or don't say it. You've just listed, what are you trying to indicate with this addition? This is to include the removing and the replacing of the spoons in the Beit Mikdash. There were certain spoons that were used to move around the ashes, and they were replaced so that they would be clean every day. And if I wouldn't have said both the itemized list and then said the general rule, I might not have thought that those can be done any time during the day. Because we do follow the Rabbi Yossi, the Tanya, as it was taught Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi says, Silike Yashana Shachris, you can remove the old ones in the morning, Resira Techadasha Aravit, and here translated as in the afternoon, before night. So, you know, if I said that Sadaka box, you can only change it during, you need to change that every day. Change the Sadaka box every day. You might think, okay, so I'll, in the morning, I should move it and put a new one there straight away. It has to be done as soon as possible. You say, no, when I say change it every day, I mean, at some point during the day, it should be changed. So you could move it in the morning and bring it back at 3 p.m. And I've just done it during the day. And that's what they're saying, the spoons, Rabbi Yossi's view. And you can move it, Ein b'chach klum, it's not a big deal if you change it at separate points during the day. Umani makayem, but hold on, it says, Lifnei Hashem tamid, it has to be before God all the time. So how can you have a gap? You know, fine, you do it some point during the day, but there's now a gap. What about tamid? Shlei shulchan below lechem, and that little dalet after Yehei says that there are other variants in other places where it says yalin, it shouldn't lie overnight without any lechem on the shulchan. So talking about changing things every day, it just means it shouldn't be overnight with nothing there when it is before God all the time. But it just has to be present each day, it doesn't matter what time. Anything that has to be done at night during darkness can be done any time during the night. What does this include? This includes eating the Pesach. And we don't follow the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who says, it says you should eat the meat. It's not Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It says in this verse, and it says talking about leaving Egypt this night. And what happened there? Malalana Chatzot. So there, that was only till Chatzot that they left. So too, Korban Pesach should only be until Chatzot, which of course will be the outer limit of eating the Afikoman, which will come up in a week, that we should eat it by Chatzot because of this view. But the Gemara says our Mishnah is going against that view and says you can do anything. If it's darkness, it can be darkness. It's not about speed. It's about atmosphere. full stop, end of Perek. Next Perek will start next week, which is going to be talking about, if we've done the medium of memory, I guess we're now going to talk about the context of memory, and I'll come up with something better, please God, for next week. But this is the bracha you say before, the bracha you say after, where do you have to be standing, sitting, etc., and then we're going to veer into discussions about leaning generally, Krit HaTorah, Haftorah, about what is the context of presenting sacred text and information, and then we'll get into the laws of the Bet Knesset going forward as well. Thank you for your patience. In the meantime, Hadron Lacha Karla Mafreya. We finished the second chapter and we'll do the third starting next week. I will be selling chametz officially. I've got from 9:30 to 10:30, but if you've got forms, I can do it right now. Not a big deal. I don't know if you're benching. There are matzahs to pick up as well. You show.